When the unnamed narrator discovers a journal titled Living with Dying in a hospital waiting room, he uncovers a secret that will transform his carefully isolated existence. Sakura Yamauchi, the vibrant, popular girl from his class, is dying of pancreatic disease. What follows isn't the melodramatic tearjerker you might expect, but something far more profound. Sakura's reaction to being discovered is startlingly casual. "If the doctors don't keep an eye on it, I'll die," she explains with an incongruous smile. Rather than seeking pity, she asks for secrecy and, more surprisingly, friendship from this deliberate loner who has spent years perfecting the art of avoiding human connection. The title's jarring reference, "I want to eat your pancreas," stems from an ancient belief that consuming an organ could heal the same organ in oneself, becoming a metaphor for their unlikely bond. As Sakura pulls the reluctant narrator into her world, both discover that awareness of mortality doesn't diminish life's meaning, it illuminates it. The narrator has perfected invisibility. Strategic timing to avoid morning small talk, selected lunch spots classmates avoid, and the library as his fortress. This solitude shatters when Sakura becomes a fellow student librarian, bringing chaos to his ordered world. She is his opposite. Where he observes life, she participates, dancing in rain puddles, chatting with strangers, finding joy in moments he'd dismissed. Their unlikely friendship thrives because he provides what no one else can, a relationship unburdened by pity. His emotional distance allows her to be seen as Sakura rather than a tragedy in waiting. Meanwhile, she dismantles his defenses, showing him connections don't always lead to pain. "If there's one good thing about confronting death," Sakura reflects, "it's that I live each day knowing I'm alive." When asked why she wastes limited time organizing library books, she responds that every day has equal value regardless of lifespan. Sakura's journal, Living with Dying, becomes both legacy and methodology with specific rules that shape her experience of mortality. She keeps her illness secret, not from shame, but because she wants normalcy, finding in the narrator's emotional detachment the authentic connection she can't get elsewhere. Their first major excursion to Fukuoka transforms their relationship from casual acquaintance to something deeper. The narrator feels initially abducted from his comfortable solitude, gradually surrendering to her enthusiasm and human connection. In Fukuoka, they build intimacy through shared experiences, savoring local food, visiting shrines, navigating unfamiliar streets together. When Sakura defends an elderly server from harassment, her firm yet compassionate response reveals new dimensions of her character, prompting his bitter observation that many people should die sooner than you. Their hotel stay becomes a turning point when he discovers Sakura's medical supplies, meticulously arranged syringes and pill containers. This tangible evidence of her condition shatters his intellectual understanding, forcing him to confront both her mortality and his growing emotional investment. Throughout their relationship, communication emerges as central. They speak fundamentally different emotional languages, he through absence and silence, she through presence and words. Their relationship evolves into a translation process as they learn to understand each other across this divide. Names carry significance. The narrator never addresses Sakura by name, a deliberate omission she eventually recognizes as his fear of defining who I am to you. By avoiding her name, he attempts to limit emotional vulnerability. Their truth or dare game becomes a language to navigate difficult emotional terrain, though when Sakura asks about her fear of dying, the rawness forces his retreat. Physical touch serves as another language between them. Their accidental touches, deliberate hugs, and when he carries her to bed all communicate what words cannot. Sakura's embrace during his final hospital visit conveys her fear more powerfully than any verbal expression. Most poignantly, Sakura's journal becomes her ultimate communication, speaking after death what she couldn't say in life. through it, she finally expresses her true feelings, admitting she wondered if she loved him and revealing she'd been curious about him long before they met as opposite people. Both central characters wear masks that gradually slip throughout the narrative. The narrator hides behind indifference and intellectual detachment, presenting himself as someone above human connection. His philosophy that people only care about themselves justifies his isolation while protecting him from rejection. His preference for books over people serves as a defense against messy relationships. Sakura's mask is more complex. She presents herself as carefree, hiding her terminal illness from friends and classmates. Even with the narrator, she initially maintains a cheerful facade, downplaying her condition as some numbers being off, requiring just a couple of weeks of special medicine. The novel traces their gradual unmasking. The narrator's indifference crumbles when he discovers her medical supplies. By the novel's end, after reading her journal, he abandons his mask completely, crying uncontrollably. Sakura's mask slips most notably during their hotel stay, with her question about being terrified of dying, revealing the fear beneath her cheerful acceptance. One of the novel's most profound insights is how we impact others in ways we cannot fully comprehend. Initially believing human connections were unnecessary complications, the narrator discovers their meaning through his relationship with Sakura. After her death, he makes the unprecedented decision to reach out to Kyoko, telling her, "I would like to be your friend." The narrator significantly impacts Sakura too. Her mother reveals, "After meeting you, she cried much less." By treating her normally rather than with pity, he provided what no one else could, the gift of being seen as herself, not a dying girl. In her final letter, Sakura writes that his need for her made her feel truly unique for the first time. Their relationship transforms those around them. Kyoko's hostility becomes friendship, Takahiro confronts the narrator, and Sakura's family finds comfort in discovering unknown aspects of their daughter. The novel suggests human connections create endless ripples, affecting lives unpredictably. Even after death, Sakura's influence continues through her journal, letters, and the changed lives she left behind. What makes life meaningful when time is limited? Rather than creating a bucket list of extraordinary experiences, Sakura finds meaning in ordinary moments, organizing library books, eating desserts, playing video games. When questioned why she wastes her limited time on mundane activities, she responds that every day has equal value regardless of one's lifespan. Through their relationship, the narrator discovers that meaning comes from the connections he's been avoiding. After her death, he realizes, "Because of her, for the past 4 months, I've truly lived for the first time." The novel suggests that confronting mortality reveals what truly matters, human connection. Sakura writes that living means sharing connections with other people. The people I like and dislike are who I am. Those connections give me shape. Meaning isn't found in longevity, but in depth of experience. The narrator's reflection that I was born to meet her suggests that a brief but profound connection can provide more meaning than a long but emotionally disconnected existence.